I'm George Flynn. Welcome to In-Depth TV. And today I've got a very special guest, City Councilman and my friend, Edmund Ford Jr.
Thank you, Dr.
Ford. Glad to have you here. And first of all, tell us a little bit about you. I mean, everybody knows about the Ford family. Tell us how you fit in and where you are in the Ford family, because this goes out all over the place, and we just want to know something about you first.
Okay. My father is Edmund Sr. He's the 15th out of 15 children.
He's 15th the out of 15.
15 out of 15, yes, but out of my mom and dad, I'm the first one.
Okay.
And I was born in Mobile, Alabama, but I was raised in Memphis. Graduated from Central High School.
Central Warriors.
Yes.
Me too.
All right. Graduated from Tennessee State University. Got my bachelor's in mathematics. Went to Vanderbilt for grad school. Did 2 years of PhD work in leadership and policy studies. Mm-hmm. And then I matriculated that back to Tennessee State and got my doctoral degree in higher ed administration and supervision. I've been at Central High School, our alma mater, for 10 years. I've been teaching 13 overall, and I teach algebra 1 to 9th graders.
Okay, so you're a teacher, and you're also on this, you know, you come from the Ford family. How did you personally get interested in politics? Were you just around it all the time, or?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, Dr. Flynn. Let's say that you and I were at the same school and you had this premonition that I was going to run for office later down the road. I would have said, George, there's no way in the world I would have even thought of running for office. But a lot of things that people don't know, the transition was one where I actually watched my uncles and my father and my cousin. And over time, it was something that I was interested in because I wanted to serve people. You know about serving people all the time, whether it's occupational or when you were in government and otherwise. Serving people is always something that makes you not only feel good, but it makes you realize that you're actually doing something positive.
Are you able to take this experience into the classroom?
I am.
And talk about what's going on in the world in addition to math?
Yeah, it's a mix. I try to stay away from things that you're not supposed to talk in the public school.
Well, not polarizing, but just general overall, why it's important. And I bet you inspire a lot of students.
I ask them a particular question. When they say, Dr. Ford, we've seen you on TV. I said, well, what was I talking about? You know what answer I get? I don't know. I said, well, let's talk about some of the things that may affect you. It may affect your family. It may affect your community. It may affect your neighborhood. So without crossing any boundaries, we do have some of those intelligent discussions on things that do affect their backyard. I've been at Central High School for 10 years, and I love what I do there. When I leave about 2:15, 2:30, 4 days out of five, on the average, I go to City Hall and I work on constituent business.
So you've got two jobs.
Yeah.
And what happens on council days? How do you juggle everything?
Well, you know,
it's a difficult thing.
People ask me, how do I juggle it? I just say I do it. So when I wake up at 5:30, 6 o'clock, and I wake up and I know that I'm about to do those 7.5 hours at the schoolhouse, I just run through it. It's sort of like, have you ever watched a game show be taped?
Yes.
I remember watching in Nashville Wheel of Fortune, and I saw Pat Sajak and Vanna White do 5 tapings in one sweep. And they said teaching is just like you performing a game show, because let's say that you got 7 periods that you're teaching.
Right.
But that same energy that you have first period, you have to endure that same energy to your students in the afternoon as well. And that's the same thing that Pat Sajak and Vanna White did when they did their 5 tapings. You would have never known if they were tired at the end, because they had that same euphoria over and over, and it made the audience excited, it made the contestants excited. And I feel like when you're in that classroom, you have to emulate a lot of the things that a game show host will do. But to go back to one of your other questions on what I did in order to prepare for being a city council member, I was in Nashville. My principal at the time, Carl Lane, gave me the blessing, saying that I know you're not going to stay in Nashville. I know that you desire to be an elected official in Memphis. So on first and third Tuesdays, as a segue to your other question, I used to travel in my truck the 200 some odd miles.
Oh my gosh.
Back and forth every other Tuesday. Now, it wasn't easy, Dr. Flynn, because I would have to get up about 4 or 5 a.m. from Nashville, drive to Memphis to City Hall, and you know how
That's a hard drive. Anybody that doesn't think going to Nashville is a hard drive, it's a difficult drive.
Yeah. And not just that, some of the meetings might have gone to like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. I was back on the road going back to Nashville to teach my students the following day.
Right.
And I did that for 3 years in succession because my father basically told me, if you want this position, you have to earn it. You have to show me that you want it and not just say, mm-hmm. well, I want to pursue, but I don't put any work behind it.
Yeah, well, you've done it, and I think it's great, and you have earned it. Do you have any pet projects going on now with what you're doing?
Oh well, there's actually two things coming up very soon. Councilman Frank Covette and I are working on something. In fact, it was my brainchild, but I wanted him to be part of it, and it involves. Putting an exploratory committee together to look to see if it's feasible for Memphis to have a veterans home.
Now, before you go too much further,
sure.
You said something very important there.
What did I say?
It was your idea, mm-hmm. but you didn't care who got the credit.
No. Look,
you don't. You just want to get the job done. Whoever gets the credit, that's where you get something mm-hmm. done. That is so. I just when you said that, I said, wait a minute, this. This friend of mine but you brought in other people. You don't
Absolutely.
Try to do it all yourself. You didn't try to have name recognition with it. You just want to get the job done. And it's about the Veterans Home for Memphis.
Yes.
Now, there's a West Tennessee Veterans Home.
Correct.
But
yes.
We need one here. Why? Where did you come up with the idea that we might need it?
Well, first of all, we have over 50,000 veterans in Shelby County, and approximately 35,000 of those reside in Memphis. I have talked to the West Tennessee Veterans Organization.
Right.
And we've had wonderful conversations. In fact, they've informed me that we shouldn't reinvent the wheel, but also let's make sure that we also put an emphasis, a very important emphasis, on making sure that the facility in Arlington succeeds. And I wholeheartedly agree with that, and I plan on saying the same thing at council on Tuesday, because right. if Arlington doesn't succeed, the idea for Memphis having a veterans home would not succeed as well. Some of the information that I've been given is that it would be 144 beds. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the 50,000 that would have to be served, 144 wouldn't be enough. In fact, 288 would probably not be enough as well. But talking to other legislators, one that comes to mind is Senator Brian Kelsey. Mm-hmm. I asked him his own opinion on whether it would be feasible to have two facilities in Shelby County. He gave me a quick chronology on what it would take in order to even be considered, but he mm-hmm. also said that the individuals that he talked to from a federal standpoint essentially said that if one of the counties in Tennessee would have two facilities, it would be Shelby County.
Well, there's so many veterans.
Yes.
And like you say, all of a sudden you build it and you build a new facility and it's swamped.
Yeah.
You know, the demand is the need is so great.
And then at the end of the day, I say this to anybody. Those individuals fought to protect our freedoms, and right. they have probably been in some shape, form, or fashion a positive influence on those who are serving now in order to protect those same freedoms. And I think it would just be the best thing for us to do. Frank Covette and I discussed it in more detail, and I appreciate my esteemed colleague and being my co-sponsor on this, because he informed me that, you know, the closest facility is 144 miles away from Memphis.
Right. Well, what is the process? You bring it up. What happens then?
Well, on Tuesday, this upcoming Tuesday, the entire council is going to vote on the resolution. The resolution consists of putting the committee together. It will consist of 11 individuals from community leaders to county commissioners, state mm-hmm. representatives, hopefully a state senator as well.
So it's yes. an exploratory committee.
It is, yes. It's going to be sort of similar to what work the West Tennessee Veterans Organization is already doing. But in no shape, form, or fashion are we trying to compete with them. As I said before, you want them to succeed. We want them to succeed because without them, we won't be able to succeed. But at the same time, they understand that we can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
Right. Well, I think it's brilliant. And thank you very much, you know, for all the veterans. And I know a lot of them, and I know they need help. And you have another idea. I've heard about it. Mm-hmm. Everybody talks about we need jobs.
Yes.
We need, everybody's out there saying, I can't find work. I can't find work.
Right.
You have some information about that that might open a lot of eyes.
Well, I got some information from the chamber, and I asked them how many unduplicated ads do we have as far as jobs and, you might as well say, careers per se. I was informed that the December numbers showed that we had approximately 16,000 jobs in the city of Memphis that have not been claimed as of last month. And when I first got that number, I was shocked.
Yeah,
I thought
I'm
it
shocked
would be
right
significantly
now. Listen,
less.
I thought it would be like 500. But you're saying 16,000.
And we're not just talking about $7.25 an hour jobs, Dr. Flynn. We're talking about jobs that range from $11 an hour almost $40 an hour. So you're talking about really careers where if individuals have the desire and the will to work, I would love to do something in my capacity to help those individuals find work.
And how do people find out about some of these jobs? I mean, if there are 15 or 16,000 of them,
right.
how do you find out where they are? Is there any way to, do they call? Do they go to a website? How would they know?
Well, those are the answers I want to find next week at City Council. In fact, I've talked to the chairman of the council. He's going to allow me a few minutes to discuss what I want to do, and I would like to have the entire City Council's input on which way we need to proceed. I know that we have the Wynn Investment Network. I know Shelby County Schools and our community colleges do their part. I know community leaders probably do their part as well. I know some nonprofit organizations such as Streets Ministries probably do a few things to where they look at particular youth between 16 and 18 and they get them involved in a particular trade and then ultimately find them careers at the end of the day. But what I would like to do is, first of all, let's recategorize those jobs. In fact, the study that I got shows at least where 15,000 of those jobs sit, whether it's professional related, whether it's sales, whether it's construction. What I like to do is get all the major players to the table and say, okay, what mechanisms can we put in place so that those 35,000 unemployed individuals in the city can see, oh, we have 16,000 jobs here. Now, one thing that I did do, Dr. Flynn, because I just can't come in and say, well, you're not doing your job, or you're not doing your job. What I did was the same day as council, it was on the third week of January, I decided to go to one of the career fairs that some of the local stations were sponsoring.
Right.
It was in Cordova. And I met a lady named Lisa Kane, and she was over the entire career fair. She calls it a career fair, not a job fair, because we're looking to make sure that people have careers and not just a job. And she informed me that those individuals that come in, about 2,000 may come in, and on the spot, about 700 will receive a job offer.
Oh, my God.
And that's a wonderful thing, but she said some of the things that may be a crutch to her is she's only able to do it three times a year. Now, just speaking from a preliminary standpoint, I would love to see her model, if it's viable, can we have that model emulated in multiple parts of the city where it's not just being done once every 4 months, but we could possibly see it being done once a month to where maybe we could have a fair in Cordova and a fair in Westwood and a fair in North Memphis and a fair in Midtown to where we're actually letting people know, look, you have the desire to work. We are having these spots where you can come because sometimes it may be a challenge for some individuals. And now what I did learn when I went to the career fair is there were three challenges that...
Did you get a job offer at the career fair?
Well, Shelby County Schools was there, but at the end of the day, I just wanted to make sure that I could help people at the end of the day.
So you wanted to see what they were going through.
Right. So I talked to the employers and I talked to prospective employees and I asked them, were they getting everything out of the career fair? What were the challenges that they see? And the main three that came out, and I don't know what order it would be if I quantified it later, but transportation was one of them. Like, for instance, the career fair was in Cordova. Let's say somebody
in
South—
they had a problem getting there.
They had a problem getting there. So let's say somebody in South Memphis who has the qualifications doesn't have the transportation. Well, he or she may have to take particular bus routes to get to Cordova, or they might not be able to get there for that big transportation reason. That was number one. Number two was the training issue, where several of the employers said that, look, we have wonderful people. They have all the energy in the world, but they just don't have the training that
they're not
we
trained.
Need.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, which goes back to WIN and some of these other organizations that help out with training. And then that third issue was one where I know that from a local standpoint, what I could probably do would probably be limited. But you have several individuals that may have committed egregious things young in their age.
And have a record.
Right. But then when they have to fill out that application, have you committed a misdemeanor or felony? And if so, why? And sometimes that knocks them out of the box, even if it's something that's nonviolent.
Right.
So hopefully my colleagues, because I don't want to be the smartest person in the room, I want to learn from them, but I also want to see what their perspectives are. Hopefully when I bring this to council on Tuesday, and hopefully a subsequent Tuesday, we can have those major players at the table. We can see what we can do to alleviate some of those problems, because if we have thousands of people that desire to work and have the will to work, let's do what we can within our capacity. But I also say this from a conservative standpoint. I believe that there's a threshold to where government responsibility ends and that personal responsibility begins.
Well, that brings us to government.
Okay.
You're in government. You've been in it. You've studied
it. It's my 10th year.
You've studied it since you were probably 3 years old. Probably studied it and said,
I was probably in a math book.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably said, I don't want to do that, but I'll learn about it. What do you see in our local government, national, whatever government you want to call it? Mm-hmm. What do you see as working right? What do you see as going right? We hear so much that government is bad, it's doing this, or the— what is going right? What are people not getting the pat on the back? Where is government doing the right thing?
Well, I have to say this before I get deep into the question. We have a great city council. This is a city council that I love working with, and it hurts me that I'm term limited and I'm not able to work with them on a larger capacity after this term. But the new council members that have come on, some have experience, whether they work at FedEx, or they have their own business, or where they used to be on the school board. Those individuals have come in and they've started doing yeoman's work. And I remember when this budget came in place. I'm the budget chair this year. I was the budget chair last year. And something that I do take pride in, this council worked very hard after 3:30 almost every other day since the mayor presented his budget, and we were able to pass a budget in less than 30 minutes. Now, my 10 years being on the council, that has never happened.
I mean, ever. Yeah.
Look, when I served with your son. I remember one time we stayed until 1:30 a.m., and we were disappointed at the end because we didn't get what we needed out of the budget. But at the end of the day, he and I worked very well, and we agreed on most, not all. But at the end of the day, one thing that this council does that your son and I were able to do, even if we disagreed on something, we did it in an amicable way to where we said, okay, this is done. The vote went this way. Let's start the next topic. And this council, even if we have contention somewhere, it is at a very low capacity. And that's one thing I know the media probably doesn't put too much in, because so I know we're in this state to where if it bleeds, it leads.
Right.
Or if we're just yelling down somebody's throats and doing things in a divisive, unsupported way, that'll get on the
news. That's your 6-second soundbite.
Yeah. But I'd rather be quiet and effective than loud and not effective.
So you say getting along together to get to move agendas, move things that are for the people.
Absolutely. And again, last year was my best year on the council. And I remember when we had our council retreat, that's one thing that I did let my colleagues know, and a lot of them agreed. Now, some of my colleagues, my new colleagues, don't really know how the past was. But I said, you know what? I'm not even going to look at the past. Let's look at our present so we can have a great future.
That's exactly right. Okay, we'll get into, we've talked about what it's doing right and the things it's doing right.
Yeah.
You know, it's doing a lot. We're doing the trash pickup and we're doing the most things correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see things that are not being done as efficiently or not being done the way you would like to see them done?
Well, let's talk about a couple of challenges. You know, last year we broke a record that we did not want to break. We had 228 homicides. And that was something I know that was disheartening all the way from the mayor's office, all the way down to the council, all the way down to the ordinary constituent.
Right.
And I know that the mayor would like to have a complement of 2,400, 2,500 police officers. I know a couple of things I do agree with him is that it's going to take a collective effort in order for us to deal with the crime element. And one thing that I do want to bring to the table is how can we get people employed? So I just can't, again, complain about something without having some action. And this is something that I want to help.
And that's what I like
about
it. You've got an answer. You don't just have a complaint. You say, we should do this.
Right. And one thing that we sort of disagree on is that a lot of the things that do happen in the city, even though I would love to see that compliment happen, the police coming out is sort of a reactionary thing because it's already transpired and the police come out afterwards. What can we do to prevent the actual incident from happening? So one thing that the council actually did do, there were a lot of foot soldiers, constituents, community leaders that said, look, let us do some of the work that government and our police may not necessarily be able to do. There's one gentleman that I talked to, he has an organization, he calls it a system, sort of like Shelby County Schools, he calls it a system. And he was able to get 150 gang members off the streets. And all of them have graduated from high school and now they want to be positive contributors to society. Well, he came to me, he asked, is there anything that government can do in order for us to get our story out? So if families or communities have youth that they think may be going a particular way, well, you have these organizations that say that, hey, we'll help out so that they won't be in that negative setting, much less we don't want to see them on the news and we don't want to see them in prison. We want to see them, again, as positive contributors to society. So that's one thing that we were able to do in this last budget where about $1.8 million went to 24 nonprofit organizations, and we dealt with instances such as blight, mental health, quality of life, just ordinary things in order to prevent us having 228 homicides again.
Right.
And then all those subsets of crime as well. We want to make sure that all of those categories go down. So I'm not blaming the mayor for that 228. I'm not blaming council members for that 228. But I know we don't need to break another record in 2017.
No, we don't.
So it's going to take a collective effort in order to
It does. And when you while you were talking, I mean, it just, it's the same as medicine. If you want to decrease lung cancer, you attack smoking.
Right.
You don't do surgery on the lung cancer because
no.
it's already transpired, like you said. You attack the cause, the smoking.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes a lot of sense what you're talking about. And I just hope that the council will continue on. I mean, with your just making people aware, and I think that's a really good thing. What is there anything else that citizens can do to protect or try to help decrease this crime that we have? You know, regular citizens, what can they do but stay home? I mean, you don't want that.
Well, I asked them to join their neighborhood watch, their neighborhood association. If they don't know what their neighborhood association is, they can always contact my office. The city council office is 636-6786. They can ask for my staff. We have a comprehensive list of all of the neighborhood associations. I always ask them to be as nosy of a neighbor as you can because I'd rather you call the police and it's not an issue than you not call the police and there is an issue. One of the town hall meetings that I had a few months ago, I was talking to some of the constituents, and some of them were like, well, we don't want to call the police because we think in some shape, form, or fashion that person is going to get us later. I said, look, they don't tell who you are, and you never know, you might be helping your neighbor. There was one instance where this lady called, and I'm glad that she did because somebody jumped a fence and they found out that that person committed 7 other crimes as well. Now, let's say that that person didn't call, where that person might have been committing 8, 9, 10, and 11. So it's just little simple things. Yeah. But at the end of the day, government can only do so much. I tell the 95,000 people in District 6, and we're actually in District 6 right now.
I know.
And the 650,000 people in Memphis, make sure that you use us and make us accountable, but also be the eyes and ears for some of the things that we might not be able to see or hear, so that we can make those things, whether it's economic development or whether it's crime or whether it's blight, if we can solve some of those problems together, it creates a better Memphis for everybody.
Well, yes, you're making your effort. You can't be everywhere. You know, a lot of the time you're in school, you're in classroom teaching. Yeah. You can't be the eyes and ears of everything everywhere. But you can have people in, if they see something, say something.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's what you're going. What about the, is there anything, what about the blue lights I see around the town here? Mm-hmm. The traffic, what are the lights where the TV
are you
cameras
talking about,
are?
Oh, the cameras?
Right.
Well, one thing that I know a lot of neighborhood associations are asking for are those cameras. And those cameras do have a particular price, but the mayor and the council have informed neighborhood associations that they can apply for particular grants in order to alleviate some of the cost, if not all mm-hmm. the cost. I know some neighborhoods are able to go ahead and write a check and say, all right, let's go ahead and get one. But I know some organizations are not able to,
right.
But we're actually doing something in order to help them so that they won't be without. There are so many organizations in my district that have talked about those cameras. And what we did do in one of our resolutions is we wanted to make sure that each district equitably received X amount of cameras.
Good.
I remember there was a formula that was introduced at first. Now, I didn't like that formula at all. Now, I'm a math person.
Math person.
So when
you,
I looked at the formula
yeah.
and I disaggregated the data, I was going to find out that District 6 was going to get these many cameras. So I was like, okay, you need to scratch all of this out. Let's just start over. Let's just make it equitable. Even if we have to divide by 7 through all districts, let's just make sure that everybody is served. Because the last thing I would want any council member, not just myself, you wouldn't want to be in a situation to where, look, you served. You wouldn't want the math to be to where it's like, well, you know, Commissioner Flynn's district, because of the crime element not necessarily being in there, well, you're not going to get that many cameras. Well, when you go back to your constituency, they may have a few words for you, and
that's
then
right.
you have to justify that. So we made sure that it was equitable across the board. So.
I think that's great, because we're all in this together.
We are. We are.
We are seriously all in this together, every district. Mm-hmm. Every city councilman, every county commissioner, everybody's in the same thing. Well,
yeah.
In the last few seconds,
sure.
wrapping up,
mm-hmm.
I just want to tell you how much we appreciate it. And
look, I appreciate the invite.
And you being able to tell us from your heart what's been going on. And do you have any last few words for the people that are watching and I'm sure are taken with you?
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate it, and I hope you got a long future in politics.
Well, my concentration is on being the best city councilman in this last term. Whatever happens, happens. And I love the classroom. I love my 14 and 15-year-olds that I see every single day and some of the challenges that they bring. But who doesn't have challenges? So we'll just see what happens in the near future.
I'm sure we've got a bright and brilliant future for you. And thank you very much. My guest has been City Councilman Edmund Ford, Jr., and he is on the Memphis City. When is your term up?
2019.
We've got him for some more years and look
yes,
forward to big things from you. I'm George Flynn with In-Depth TV. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time.